Welcome to another episode of the Criminal Law Department Presents podcast, a production of the Criminal Law Department at the Judge Advocate General's Legal Center and School in Charlottesville, Virginia. Every 2 weeks, we release a new episode. Today, we're going to have a conversation about a recent opinion from the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces. Please note that these episodes may contain facts and circumstances surrounding criminal trials. Listener discretion is advised.
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable United States Court of Appeals of the Armed Forces is now open and in session. God save the United States of America in this honorable court.
And welcome back to CAF Chats. I'm Major Callie Kerr, and today I'm joined by Major Melissa Eisenberg. Today, we're diving into the case of United States versus Urita, a case where the CAF addressed actual and implied bias of a panel member. Major Eisenberg, could you tell us a little bit about the facts of this case?
Yeah, sure. So Specialist Urita was charged with one specification of a false official statement and several specifications of sexual assault. At trial, he chose to be represented by both military and civilian defense counsel. During the panel member selection process, the defense counsel challenged a panel member, who the court has called Sergeant First Class Bravo, is using a pseudonym for this panel member. The challenge was for both actual and implied bias based on statements that this panel member had made about a soldier who hired civilian lawyers. At trial, the military judge denied both the challenges, and the appellant was convicted of the false statement specification and two of the sexual assault specifications. He was sentenced to a dishonorable discharge, 8 months confinement, and a reduction to E1. He appealed to the ACCA, arguing that the military judge erred in denying his challenge against this panel member. However, the ACCA summarily affirmed the findings and sentence of the trial court.
Okay, so now that we understand the background of this case, let's jump into the issues that the CAF reviewed. So first, CAF granted review to specifically address whether the military judge erred in denying Urita's challenges for cause against Sergeant First Class Bravo, the panel member, for both actual and implied bias claims. And so here, CAF reversed the ACCA's decision and held that while the military judge did not abuse his discretion denying the actual bias challenge, he did err in denying the implied bias challenge. Sergeant First Class Bravo's voir dire responses created a close case of implied bias, and the military judge failed to follow the liberal grant mandate to excuse potential panel members in close cases. Major Eisenberg, let's talk a little bit more about the specific facts that are related to the implied bias issue.
Sure. Let's focus on the facts that were specifically addressed by the CAF, where they found evidence that the panel member was impliedly biased. First, the panel member stated during voir dire, quote, "To me, hiring an outside civilian lawyer means that you don't trust your defense counsel much." He added that in his experience, soldiers hire civilian counsel only after a trial where they did not get their desired outcome. This implies that the appellant has been found guilty.
Well, that statement is at a minimum confusing. It's unclear if that means that he thought appellant had already been found guilty and we were at a rehearing, or if he was talking about a different procedure altogether. It's completely unclear. But regardless, there's a clear lack of understanding of the military justice process generally. And this statement was really not a great starting point for impartiality. So did the military judge try to clarify this issue?
No, he did not. That was something that the CAF focused on. The military judge asked the panel member if when he meant he didn't trust his attorney, was it in this particular case? And the panel member had said all of it. The military judge didn't ask any follow-up questions to clarify what that panel member meant when he said it was unusual that the appellant had a civilian attorney, and never explored the question of whether or not the panel member believed appellant had previously been found guilty because appellant now had retained civilian defense counsel. The military judge also didn't provide any instruction to the panel member to correct his misunderstanding of the law or whether the accused had been previously found guilty.
Yeah, and it sounds like the military judge didn't fully articulate his reasoning on the record. And the CAF highlights here that the more reasoning a military judge provides on the record, the more deference that military judge is going to receive when looking at the record. And so that is an issue in this case.
Precisely. The CAF spent some time discussing that, how the military judge had combined his analysis for both implied bias and actual bias and didn't distinguish even the law with respect to the two.
Okay, so let's break that down for our audience here because there's different legal principles at play here. So implied bias isn't about whether someone is in fact biased, but it's about the appearance of bias. And the test is whether the risk that the public will perceive that the accused receives something less than a fair court or a fair trial with impartial members is too high. The court looks at the totality of the circumstances and assumes that the public knows the military justice system when conducting this analysis.
That's right. It's all about a view of public confidence in the fairness of the process. And in particular, in the military, that's where the liberal grant mandate comes in.
Yeah, exactly. So military judges are instructed to err on the side of granting defense challenges for cause. And so if it's a close call of implied bias, as it was here, the challenge should be granted. And this is because impartial court members are an essential condition for a fair court martial. This recognizes that there's unique aspects of military justice. And one of those unique aspects is that panel members are selected by convening authorities using Article 25 criteria. So let's turn now to the takeaways for Eureta, for the practitioners out there. So first, I think that the government counsel should view this case as a call to protect the record. Judge Maggs, in the opinion, specifically addressed this in his concurrence. Judge Maggs writes that if trial counsel wanted the military judge's ruling to stand on appeal, then trial counsel also needed to take whatever additional permissible actions were necessary to build a proper record. So depending on the circumstances, that can be not opposing a defense motion for bias, or as in this case, that could be taking the opportunity to ask the prospective panel member to clarify questions such as, what did Sergeant First Class Bravo mean by his observation that it was unusual for soldiers to retain civilian defense counsel? And whether he believed that appellant had previously been found guilty at a different proceeding, because now he had retained a civilian defense counsel. Any other takeaways, Major Eisenberg?
Sure, and if I can hearken on that first point a little bit, I think it's important the majority opinion talks about the military judge's error, but it is important to note that trial counsel, like you noted, has an important role to play and can correct that record and ensure that that process is completed appropriately. I would also add that if a military judge doesn't sufficiently explain the ruling, that government counsel should ask the military judge to provide a more complete reasoning. It's okay to ask the judge, Your Honor, please, can we hear your ruling with respect to implied bias with more detail? I believe this case highlighted that, especially when there's a close call, a simple recitation of the legal standard isn't going to be enough. There must be an explanation why the military judge is reaching the conclusion that he or she is reaching based on the law and the facts of that case. Notably, too, for defense counsel, this case reinforces the importance of making the appropriate motion so that even if unsuccessful at the trial level, the issue is sufficiently preserved for appeal.
Exactly. Well, that's all for this episode. Thanks for joining us today, and please join us next time as we break down more developments shaping the practice of military justice.
Thanks for joining us today for another episode of the Criminal Law Department Presents podcast. If anything you heard sparked a thought, we'd love to connect with you. Your comments help us create better future content for the field or the fleet. Reach out to us on Facebook or Instagram. The information can be found in the show notes for today's episode. The views expressed in today's podcast are those of the presenters and not necessarily the Judge Advocate General's or the Department of the Army or the Department of Defense.
Thanks, counsel, for both sides. We'll stand in recess until further order of the court.